Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we celebrate the 35th anniversary of Banned Books Week. On the program today, we'll hear from representatives of the National Coalition Against Censorship, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, the Kids' Right to Read Project, and Youth Free Expression Program. This week, we celebrate Banned Books Week and emphasize the importance of the First Amendment, which guarantees our inherent right to read. Stay tuned for this week's special program.
Thinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitual lies, alibis, disguise, another guy's democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons filled with capacity.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff, your host. This week's program is dedicated to fighting censorship and promoting our right to read. That's right, it is the annual Banned Books Week show here at Project Censored, and we are joined by Abena Hutchful, who is the program associate at the Youth Free Expression Program, the National Coalition Against Censorship in New York. And Project Censored, of course, is a member of the National Coalition Against Censorship. And we're also joined by Charles Brownstein, the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And again, for full disclosure, Project Censored is also a member of the Banned Books Week Coalition. So, Charles, let's start with you. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. This is the 35th anniversary of Banned Books Week, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So tell us about this.
Banned Books Week is the annual celebration of the freedom to read, and each year it provides an opportunity for individuals and educators and institutions around the country to celebrate our freedom to read. And right now, it's almost more important than ever because the ability for individual citizens to read broadly, read freely, and exchange contentious ideas is really important to the future of our democracy. And so this year, BannedBooksWeek.org, the Banned Books Week Coalition's effort, is really celebrating the ability of books to help us bridge our differences and explore our intellectual horizons.
That's fantastic, Charles. And it's so important, of course, right now. This is the 35th year for Banned Books Week, but books are still being challenged. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, books are being challenged everywhere still. And one of the things that we notice, of course, is that censorship tends to be about control. And so the trends that we notice in book challenges are either viewpoint-based or they are about protecting youth in, you know, a very narrow window. But, you know, fundamentally, when you get down to it, censorship is a mechanism for people to express their worldview upon others and achieve some kind of control over the world. But it's the wrong way to do it. Each individual has to make their own mind up and their own determination about the material. So, for instance, here at CBLDF, we do a lot of work protecting mainstream authors like Raina Telgemeier or Jillian Americo Tamaki, the latter of whom did This One Summer. Well, those two books, This One Summer and Drama by Raina, were the number one and two most frequently banned and challenged books last year. Those are award-winning books for kids. So, you know, what it comes down to is if you're a parent, you've got the right to raise your kid how you want, but you don't have the right to make that choice for other people. And we see that happening increasingly, particularly as times are so troubled now. You can't control the government, you can't control the economy, but a lot of people attempt to express control of their community through this kind of mechanism.
Yeah, indeed it is. And that was a great and succinct or concise overview of why it's so important to have the right to read. And it's good that you made this distinction, I believe, that, you know, of course, parents have the right to talk about what they think is appropriate for their children, but that does not extend into the public sphere and into the classroom. And, of course, Banned Books Week calls that out, as does the American Library Association and many others in the coalition. Abena Hutchful, Program Associate, Youth Free Expression Program, can you talk to our listeners? Tell them what you do at the Youth Free Expression Program and how that overlaps with Banned Books Week.
Banned Books Week really is about celebrating our right to read and our right to freely express ourselves through books and the content we read. And it's also about the freedom to read diverse views, to explore different perspectives. And what we do at the NCAC is ensure that young people, their right to read isn't infringed upon by that few people who might object to a particular viewpoint. Like Charles was saying, through censorship, one group can assert control over the cultural narrative and privilege their views over others. And what we aim to do is ensure that the views of the minority don't infringe on the rights of the whole. And we ensure that young people have access to literature, that they're able to read about different perspectives and viewpoints, both in the classroom, in their libraries, under the guidance of teachers that can help them understand some of the complex ideas that they encounter in books. One thing that we've done this year, just noting how many incidents of book challenges we've experienced this year alone, we've had over 24 book challenges. One thing we decided to do was to put the power in the hands of students. Oftentimes we hear about challenges to books from parents. We hear about it in the context of school board meetings. We don't hear the voices of the young readers these books are intended for. And we need to empower them to think critically and imagine different situations through books, but also to form their own opinions, to express those opinions and to stand up for them. So one thing that we're doing during Banned Books Week is an action kit for young readers and their parents to fight book censorship in their communities and really assert their right to read.
Indeed, that's the theme for Banned Books Week here this year as well. Abana Hutchful, you're the program associate for the Youth Free Expression Program with the National Coalition Against Censorship. Listeners can learn more at ncac.org. And if you go to the website, you can simply search for the Youth Free Expression Program and learn about their work under our work. And you have a lot of information here, including key issues from books in schools and libraries, criticizing your school, internet student journalism, video games, a whole segment on national anthem and Pledge of Allegiance protests. Quite timely. Abana, do you want to talk about any of those subcategories, or do you have anything you'd like to add?
There are tons of incidents of censorship. I mean, even outside of book censorship, we see efforts by small groups, usually conservative groups, to restrict students from expressing viewpoints that they disagree with. And what we're also noting is that there's a growing number of challenges to books on sex or sexual education, books that have to do with sexual education and that contain sexual content. Like, for example, we've had lots of challenges to the series Perfect Chemistry, which is a graphic novel series about middle schoolers that are falling in love. And we see that parents selectively object to particular passages in books that either contain sexual content or allude to sex and can lodge complaints that span for months and really deprive students in the schools to books that they really should have access to. Another example that we've seen recently is challenges to LGBT-themed books. We've seen a lot of communities backed by conservative political groups like the Capital Resource Institute or Family Resource Center challenging books that contain any references to different sexual or gender identities, that challenge or try to restrict any content about LGBT communities.
You were talking about, you know, the types of books and challenges we have with young people. And I wanted to Charles Bronstein, go to you and the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, CBLDF.org, for our listeners. Charles Bronstein, one of the things that you have here is on your website, a California school district reaffirming support for a teacher who read transgender books. So can you kind of segue off that and add to the conversation?
Important things to remember, especially during Banned Books Week, is that there's this common argument, if it's available to purchase, that it's not really banned or censored. And that's simply not true. That presumes a level of economic wherewithal that some people don't have, particularly kids. They don't have the credit cards. They don't have that independent economy. And so when you're looking at the books that are being banned and challenged, you're really harming one of the most vulnerable communities that really needs this content. And I think a lot of people like to focus on which books are banned because it's the best reading list, right? Those are the books everybody wants to, you know, have in their house. But there's two real victims of censorship that don't get talked about. One is the teacher or the librarian in the community that is having their professional judgment, and in some cases their livelihood, thrown into question. And then the other is the kids. You know, if you are a kid who is reading about transgendered lifestyles, if you are a kid who's reading about being gay, if you are a kid who's reading about sexuality, and you're encountering this material in a way that seems normal to you, when somebody tries to take that book away, they're not just saying there's something we'd object to about the book, but kids often hear, there's something wrong with me. What a horrible message to send to an intellectually curious young person. So it's really important that schools and libraries stand up for the rights of all their patrons by having proper procedures in place to deal with challenges when they come up and to err on the side of intellectual freedom or on the side of letting patrons make their own decisions about the content. And that's a tough thing sometimes because the temptation is simply to try to avoid the confrontation in many cases, but that does a disservice to the people who really need this information.
Indeed, it does. And again, it calls out the real problems with censorship. And, you know, a lot of the people that are negatively impacted by this, marginalized communities, but a lot of the people impacted by the stories that aren't told or they don't get to hear are people that are invisible in the society. And so this is, again, why it's so important. Banned Books Week is calling attention to the right to read. And certainly both the NCAC and CBLDF really on the front lines of this, making sure particularly that young people, their voices are heard, and that diversity of viewpoints are in the classroom and in the public sphere to represent the diversity of our society and culture. We're speaking with Charles Brownstein of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, the executive director there. We're also joined by Abena Hutchville, the program associate of Youth Free Expression Program at the National Coalition Against Censorship. Abena, you wanted to jump back in here.
I just wanted to add to what you were saying about underrepresented voices, and particularly to like recent cases that we've had where parents have objected to books featuring underrepresented voices. And I think it's particularly sad when the conversation turns away from education rights and the right to read and turns to parental rights, because it sounds reasonable and innocuous, but it's inherently dangerous because, yeah, of course, we support parents and who doesn't love rights. And so parental rights seems like a perfectly reasonable thing to advocate for. But parents just have the right to educate and guide the education of their own child, full stop, not other children. And in this case that I want to highlight, in California, which is one of the states that we consider as the leader when it comes to a lot of legislation on protecting education rights and protecting the right to free speech. But even there, we have some parents who maybe, presumably with well intentions, really threaten and endanger the rights of other students to learn. For example, we had one case in California where a parent was objecting to a children's book on gender identity, right? The school invites kids to bring books to school and share their favorite books and share different cultural experiences through books. And sometime after, a kindergartner brought her favorite book, I Am Jazz, which is about a young person struggling with their gender identity. A lot of young people we know struggle with gender identity, and so this does tell the experiences of a lot of young people in the country. And parents, backed by conservative lobby groups, advanced a summer-long campaign to change the literary policy to disallow students from bringing books into the school without parental notification, parental approval. And we've seen this push for more parental rights and parental notification policies is happening all across the country. And what it really means is that we are privileging the views of a small group of parents over those of our entire education system, right? These books are taught under the guidance of trained educators who understand the content and are able to contextualize it in a way that students can understand. And when we have parent groups advocating for their right to educate their children to extend to those of other people's children who believe that their views should be privileged above the views of the entire state education system, all teachers and all librarians, then we're really doing a disservice to young people, particularly to young people whose voices would be underrepresented normally. So we've noticed a growing trend of these types of challenges to books that discuss the unknown, the fear of the other, and we believe that it's right for us to step in the fore and defend the rights of all but also to empower young people to do the same. So this action kit that I was discussing that we're launching over Banned Books Week is really aimed to give young people the tools and the language they need, the understanding of the law and the understanding of the reasons that people actually challenge books and what censorship can do to a society, the damaging effects of censorship, so they can defend books like I Am Jazz. They can defend the books that they want to read and also even books they don't even want to read from censorship.
That's Abana Hutchful. She is the program director at the Youth Free Expression Program, the National Coalition Against Censorship. You can learn more at ncac.org. We're also joined by Charles Brownstein, executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, cbldf.org. And of course, today's program on the Project Censored Show is dedicated to Banned Books Week going on right now. You can learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. After this brief musical break, we'll continue our conversation about Banned Books Week. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. Today's program is dedicated to Banned Books Week, right? Fighting censorship and, of course, fighting for our right to read. And we are still joined on the line by Charles Brownstein, who is the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. We are now joined by James LaRue, the head of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom and Freedom to Read Foundation. James LaRue, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks, Mickey. Good to be here.
So we're celebrating the 35th anniversary of Banned Books Week. Perhaps give us a few words about that, and then you can dovetail off the conversation we've been having about the kinds of books and so forth that have been banned, particularly with young people. I know you have a lot to say about that. So, James, please chime in.
Okay. Well, all this really kind of began back in 1982. There was book people gathering in Chicago, and kind of as a lark, the Intellectual Freedom Office and people who some of the booksellers said, you know, let's round up some of these books because many of these very popular books wind up being challenged, meaning someone tries to remove them or restrict their access in various libraries. And so they put some police tape around them and made a big exhibit in the middle, and everybody went gaga. You know, oh, who doesn't want me to read this book? And if that's what they don't want me to read, then by God, that's the first thing I've got to read. So media got very interested in it, and since 1982, the media continues to be interested in it. Why is it that some Americans don't want other Americans to read certain books? So that's kind of the catchy thing, and that gives us a chance every year to remind everybody that the American Library Association does not ban books. That's not what this is about. What we do is keep track of attempts to ban books and talk about what we think that means. So when we were talking a little bit earlier, you said there's kind of a rising tide of interest in parental notification. And so what is it that drives people, what drives parents to say, I want my child to read this book? And I happen to have some experience with this one. For 24 years, I was the director of a public library back in Colorado, and we had 250 attempts to have books removed. And at some point, somewhere around 150, I said, you know, what's going on with this? So I spread a bunch of these challenges out in front of me, and all of a sudden it snapped into place that 99% of the challenges we received fell into one of two categories. There were parents of children between the ages of 4 and 6, or parents of children between the ages of 14 and 16. And so suddenly it wasn't about right versus left. It wasn't about religious versus secular. It was about that period in our children's lives when suddenly they could move from one phase to the next. It was the end of infancy and the beginning of childhood, a period when you lose control over the entire environment of the child and you kind of freak out a little bit as a parent. The second one, 14 to 16, what happens then? It's the end of childhood and the beginning of adulthood. And once again, parents say, oh, I don't want my baby to grow up. I want them back. And so I realized that the common denominator behind so many of these attempts to censor library materials wasn't ideology. It was love and loss and grief. They didn't want their kids to grow up.
That's pretty powerful statement and observation, James LaRue. And you've written at length about this. What are some of the things that you've thought about or come up with in terms of not only helping parents maybe deal with or cope with that, but also in terms of expressing the importance about the right to read?
Here's what I think it is. You know, in Virginia over the past year, we had a number of parents who were agitating to say, if my child in high school, so now we're talking 16, 17 in advanced English, you know, advanced placement English classes, we don't want our children to read anything that has sex in it. And so these are kids who are a year away from being old enough to get married or old enough to vote or old enough to go to war. And my observation has always been, you don't protect your child by saying, don't read something. That the safest sex of all is reading about it. And if you want somebody to figure out, you know, what's going to be happening a year or so later as an adult, what better place to learn that? Be surprised by it on the street? Or read about it and talk about it with adults and with teachers and with your parents so you have some idea about what you're getting into. So my comment is always, the world is a dangerous place, but reading about it isn't dangerous. Reading about it is the best way possible to prepare yourself for the world.
Well, what a fantastic point, James LaRue. You're at the Office for Intellectual Freedom, American Library Association. Charles Brownstein, Executive Director, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Let's bring you back into the conversation here because, of course, many, not all, but many comics, of course, resonate with young people. And it's certainly a fantastic doorway into the world of literature for many. And comics deal with a lot of controversial issues and subjects.
Absolutely. And, you know, comics, unlike film, unlike prose, thrive on the power of the static image. And so there's an opportunity for people to fixate on a single image as opposed to taking the work as a whole and determine that, you know, this is objectionable for their community. And so one of the challenges that we've been facing in the comics community, and I'm sure, you know, many of the folks listening who've tried to bring comics up in their schools and libraries has, is overcoming those kinds of knee-jerk stigmas about the medium's value or those knee-jerk stigmas about how a single image, which does have power, can override somebody's perception of the entire narrative. The strength of comics is that we live in a visually literate century, and this form of literature resonates with our young people who are growing up with devices, who are growing up in a heavily media-saturated environment, and it just quiets that down and creates this intimacy of ideas in this visually literate context. It also provides an ability to go deep into understanding others and understanding self, whether it's a character who might be a superhero like Ms. Marvel, who's a Pakistani-American superhero from Queens, or whether it's a coming-of-age narrative like Fun Home, where Alison Bechdel, who's graphic novel has been adapted as an award-winning Broadway production, is coming to terms with her relationship with her father and her relationship with her own sexuality. These are really powerful ideas that are executed in a way that captivates people and draws them in, and I think that needs to be celebrated, not prohibited.
So Charles Brownstein, on your website, cbldf.org, you have a Banned Books Week handbook for 2017. The Comic Book Legal Defense Fund Banned Books Week handbook, and that's actually available for free, and you remark here that comics are the most banned books in the U.S.
That's absolutely right. The top banned and challenged books, as recorded by the ALA last year, were This One Summer by Mariko and Jillian Tamaki, a coming-of-age graphic novel that was the first graphic novel shortlisted for the Caldecott Medal, was the top book, and Drama by Raina Telgemeier, which is a middle-grade reader's book about these middle school kids in a school play, was the second most frequently challenged book. These books are mainstream literature for young people, and they're being challenged because they address things that happen in young people's lives. This One Summer is girls on the brink of adolescence figuring out what is happening around them when a parent is dealing with a miscarriage, and when the older kids down at the video store are talking about their misadventures with sexuality and romance and so forth. It's their version of the CW, if you will. Nothing is shown. Everything is put together through language and inference and image. It's a really powerful book. Drama by Raina Telgemeier has a character who happens to be gay, and there's no sexual content whatsoever. And yet the fact of a gay character in a young person's book has led to a raft of challenges in this area. This is really sad stuff, as we discussed earlier. You know, these are pretty normal themes that happen in young adult lives. They're not handled sensationally in these books. They allow the reader space to make up her or his own mind about what's happening in the stories, and those kids are being told, hey, there's something wrong with you for reading it. That's absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, that's the voice of Charles Brownstein, the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Again, you can learn more at cbldf.org. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, a major partner in Banned Books Week every year. And James LaRue, head of the Office for Intellectual Freedom at the ALA, let's go back to you. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Banned Books Week this year in terms of any recent numbers or any recent pattern among the challenges, again, that we're seeing in the 35th year of Banned Books Week?
You bet. And I suppose I should also put out one of our URLs, too. So if you go to ala.org/bbooks for banned books, you'll get all kinds of information, too, about some of our attempts to highlight what we think is going on. So first of all, Charles is absolutely right. Graphic novels seem to be one of the things that people are getting exercised about now, and I absolutely agree with him that there's some fine writing that's happening here. In fact, this is some of the best literature that I read today. I'm a comic book fan myself. I always say that I was one of the first six-year-olds in my block who could spell invulnerable, which is one of the things comic books does for you. But what that means is that, and the positive thing about this graphic novel piece is that it keeps kids reading. There was a time when you got to that kind of early adolescence and you kind of drifted away from books and just kind of went over to watching TV or movies. But Charles is right. You know, this is literature, and it's very fine literature that tackles real issues. What I think we forget is that children are interested in the world around them. They want to understand it. So, of course, they're going to write about the issues that matter to them. So that's one thing. Graphic novels is definitely on the rise. The other thing that we're seeing as a trend kind of continues what's gone on over the past couple of years, and that's that the overwhelming majority of the books that gets challenged are by or about diverse populations. And so diverse often means LGBT. America, mainstream America, still seems to be very exercised about transgendered youth this year. But we also have concerns about cultural and ethnic minorities, about the disabled. And this past year, if there was any one thing that jumped out at me as a single phrase that everybody seemed to be talking about was graphic sex, meaning if anybody talks about sex at all, somehow that's very dangerous, which I find surprising given the nature of commercial advertising in the United States, which is all about sex.
That seems to be recurring thematically. And again, you can learn a lot more about that at the ala.org website /advocacy/bbooks. In terms of numbers, are we looking around the same numbers of challenges? Do you see any kind of spike in the past year? And maybe do you think, is this at all in your mind related to the political climate after the election of Donald Trump?
Well, that's interesting. I think that, you know, first of all, I have to say that the reported challenges are just a snapshot. We know that it's nowhere near complete. We've seen something like a 17% increase in reports over last year, but we also know from some studies we did back in 2011 that most of the challenges that happen don't get reported. And think about that. Imagine that you're a school librarian, and their principal comes in and says, I got a call. A parent is very exercised about this. We don't need the controversy. They take the book off the shelf and disappear. So the school librarian might think, well, I should help. What do I do? How do I respond to this? But they're worried about losing their jobs. So most of the reports that we get are kind of confidential. Mm-hmm. And we know, as I say, from that 2011 studies in three different states, that somewhere between 3 and 12% of the cases are reported. So, you know, that's the first thing. I think that it's increasing. I think that it's increasing in schools because we have fewer school librarians than we used to. Many of those have been cut by school programs. And these are students or these are teachers that don't know that there is a selection policy and a request for reconsideration policy, and they don't know that they're supposed to report it. So that's an issue, and that's one of the reasons we sound the alarm about censorship once a year at Banned Books Week. But one of the other, back to your point about do we see a shift in the political times, and one of the things that we noticed at the end of 2016, right after the presidential election, there was a huge increase in the reports of what we call hate crimes in libraries, so not just hate speech. In the 3 years before then, we had had one sample of someone who had vandalized a library wall and, you know, written racial epithets on it, one in 3 years. At this point, we have, I believe, 38 reports of hate crimes in libraries since the November election. So we're kind of tracking that, and I think that does seem to be a clear result of some sort of political shift where some parts of our society felt emboldened to make these kinds of, usually it's vandalism, it's ripping apart copies of the Quran and shoving them in the toilet. It's writing racial epithets or swastikas on the wall. And in a couple of cases that are fairly serious, we have actual life threats to, in both cases, women who were wearing Muslim garb.
My goodness. You just said, James LaRue, that you've seen a significant uptick in this in 2017.
Yeah, we have. You know, and when we started tracking that particular question of hate crimes, again, not just people saying something nasty, but doing something, vandalizing property or threatening life, I don't know if it's picking up steam. We've had kind of, you know, a lot of it right after the election, and it's kind of petered out. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this is not a trend, and it was just blowing off the many high spirits and anger after the election.
Well, and again, libraries, I mean, this is an epicenter of intellectual freedom and the right to read and the right to know. Very important information, James LaRue. Thank you so much for sharing that information with our listeners. And Charles Bronstein, let's go back to you very quickly. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, your final remarks here for today's program on Banned Books Week. Banned Books Week is upon us, and both of you, of course, have fantastic resources in your website, so we encourage listeners to go there. But Charles, some final words?
Yeah, Banned Books Week is only as strong as all of us that come into it and invest energy in it, so I would encourage everybody to not only go to ALA's website and CBLDF's website, cbldf.org, but also to go to bannedbooksweek.org and learn about what other members of the coalition are doing near you. There's a lot of great programs. The Dramatists Legal Defense Fund, for instance, is putting on a showcase of banned and challenged theatrical productions called Band Together. Pen America is doing a great program in New York City at the Strand Bookstore. The NCAC has a whole number of great resources. Index on Censorship is doing some events in the UK. So go to bannedbooksweek.org and find out what's happening in your community and be a part of it, because together we can celebrate our right to read.
Indeed, Charles Bronstein and Project Censored is also doing some events in Northern California surrounding Banned Books Week, and certainly proud to be involved in the Banned Books Week Coalition. James LaRue, Office for Intellectual Freedom, Freedom to Read Foundation, American Library Association, thank you once again for joining the program, and thank you for sharing such important information with our listeners.
Thank you.
Up next on the Project Censored Show, we'll continue our discussion about Banned Books Week. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I am Mickey Huff, your host, and today's show, it's our annual Banned Books Week special, and we just got off the line with James LaRue with the American Library Association Office for Intellectual Freedom, and we were also joined by Charles Bronstein from the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. So those of you that had tuned in earlier know that we were also joined by Abena Hutchful, the program associate at the Youth Free Expression Program at the National Coalition Against Censorship, NCAC.org, and we are bringing Abena back into the conversation because we want to highlight some more about what you can do to get involved and how you can be part of Banned Books Week. And Abena, you are going to talk to us a little bit more about this action toolkit you have, right?
Yeah. It started out, actually, just resources that we had on our website for young people to look up if they wanted some information on how to fight book censorship. Like, what do I do if someone is trying to take this book out of my library or classroom? Because we really believe that young people, even though they have young minds and they're developing and we need to guide them in their education, they're just young, right? They're not dumb. They can reason and they can think and they can also advocate for themselves. And we wanted to put this information together in a way that would be useful for them and also like easier to understand. So this toolkit, this action kit, has a lot of advocacy tips for what to do. You hear of potential book censorship in your school, or if there are objections to a particular type of book or particular content in schools, as we're seeing, this doesn't just pertain to books, it also pertains to video and other media that students consume. And some of the advocacy tips, for instance, involve activities that you can do in your community, ways to bring your community together to support you defending the right to read, organizing book clubs, fun things that kids can do without necessarily the resources and support of their parents, but along with their parents, ways to introduce conversations about books at home and really bring your family and household into activism with you. And one of the things that we're hoping this action kit will do is foster a love and appreciation of reading, but also a sense of agency. Because we believe young people have agency, everyone does. And if we want young people to be agents for positive change in this world, then we have to give them the tools and resources they need to do that, to really create a positive difference. And I think that this action kit will at least help young people do that in their classrooms and schools and libraries. If we tell young people through this action kit that it's never okay to censor, that no book should ever be banned, that banning one book in one context means banning all books, then I think that we can at least instill a love of reading and appreciation for the right to read in schools.
Indeed. In fact, Abena, that's the theme here of Banned Books Week this year, is our right to read. And certainly it's fantastic to have you on the program, NCAC, and the Youth Free Expression Program. Fantastic to have Charles on from Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, James LaRue from the American Library Association. Banned Books Week is a really broad coalition of people that really support the right to read and are in the fight against censorship. And Abena, you are certainly there also on the front lines for youth and for young people, and that is so greatly appreciated. Is there a place that you could maybe direct listeners to go online? Of course, I've already said ncac.org and Banned Books Week, given the Banned Books Week site, which is bannedbooksweek.org. But do you have a way that people can learn more about this action kit?
Go to our website, ncac.org, and click on resources. It should pop up. It's also going to be on our main page for quite some time, because we want to make sure that it gets a lot of exposure and young people can go right to it when they visit our website. You can also tweet us at NCA Censorship and get lots of information from us through there. We tweet very regularly.
I just went to ncac.org. I clicked on resources, and Book Censorship Toolkit comes right up front. So it's very easy to find. Yep, very easy to find. And I want people to find it. So I just went and did it while you were talking to me to show people that it was so simple that even I could find it while we were just sitting here on air. You also have here the First Amendment in Schools, a resource guide, of course, the censorship newsletter. And again, if listeners don't know what's going on with the National Coalition Against Censorship, you're all celebrating free speech. November 6th, you're celebrating Joan Burton, who is the longtime executive director there, and of course, the incoming director, our friend Christopher Finan. So a lot of things going on at NCAC, and we certainly direct listeners to the site, ncac.org, bannedbooksweek.org. So, Abena Hutchful, thank you so much for your work and for joining us on the Project Censored Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next on the Project Censored Show, we'll be joined by comic authors and artists Adam Bessie and Peter Glanting to talk about a new graphic chapter that is in Censored 2018 on the Trump universe. We'll continue our conversation on Banned Books Week and the importance of graphic works as well, given that they are most targeted on the banned or challenged list. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff, and today we're talking about Banned Books Week. And we have on the phone now with us, we have the graphic artist, Peter Glanting. He is a cartoonist and illustrator. He works on comics. He actually has an MFA in comics from California College of the Arts, and he lives and works out of Portland, Oregon. This year, Peter Glanting, along with a colleague of mine at Diablo Valley College, Adam Bessie, an English professor who writes cartoons and nonfiction graphic essays, they both contributed a graphic chapter to Censored 2018, Press Freedoms in a, quote, post-truth, unquote, world. And Pete Glanting, we now have you on the line. So let's talk about your work in general, but also let's talk about your contribution to the new Censored book. It's chapter 5 in the Censored 2018 book, Trump Universe. Peter Glanting, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks so much for having me, Mickey. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's talk about the ideas. How did you all come up with the ideas for this Trump universe and tell our listeners about it to, you know, sort of get them excited about reading it?
Adam and I met, and we kind of tossed some ideas around, and the whole conceit of the project, if you can see it, it's about an astronaut who is going through the Trump universe, and it actually came about quite by chance. Adam wrote this great essay, and then just through the thumbnails, we came up with this image of an astronaut reading a book, and that kind of became a metaphor for how we deal with alternate facts. I forgot that I can't make air quotes.
Yeah, right.
Alternate facts.
We saw them.
Adam was just great to work with, really just knew how to direct me. And
tell our listeners, though, I mean, you're an artist, and you do this kind of work. Where can people find some of your work online?
There are a few places. My portfolio is at peterglantingdraws.com. That's Peter. Glanting is spelled G-L-A-N-T-I-N-G, draws.com. And then I've got a few comics, Delicate Adventures. I dress people up like eggs or eggs up like people. And then Tomorrow Jerks is my ongoing narrative comic about jerks living in the future, the world of tomorrow.
Right.
And that's tomorrowjerks.com as well.
Right, so our listeners can go online and find that work. And this is certainly a really political piece that you did with Adam Bessie on the Trump universe. Talk to our listeners about some of the inspirations you had for the imagery and the theme, and let's tie that together with what's so important to you about the theme during Banned Books Week.
Adam was great at finding references to use. We tried to reference classic comics and science fiction as much as possible. A lot of winks and nods to The Twilight Zone and a lot of Silver Age comic Kirby references, got Galactus and Dr. Doom imagery. a lot of space imagery, excuse me. So really trying to bring it into the world of science fiction, and then because that is the world of science fiction is kind of tied to these alternate facts, it was a real fun visual way to accompany his essay.
Right. Well, okay. So right now, I just wanted to let listeners know that we were unable to get Adam Bessie on the phone simultaneously with Peter Glanting. So we would just want to try to talk to Peter a little bit here and talk about his process and how he was working with Adam. And then we want to try to get and bring Adam Bessie in to talk about the story of the Trump universe. So Peter Glanting, is there anything else you'd like to share with listeners about your process or about how this all came together for you?
I think I'll let Adam talk a little bit more about the process because he was so great at directing. I think that about covers it. A new project coming out in a couple weeks is ArnoldVsTrump.com. It's a fun comic about, if you've seen Commando, it's like that, Arnold and a guy named Trump.
Right. Okay. So we certainly can look forward to that. And it seems like you're continuing your riff on some of these political themes involving the Trump presidency.
Yes, I've wet my beak.
Well, very good. Peter Glanting, thanks so much for joining us. We want to go and get Adam Bessie on the line now to talk a little bit more about the theme here. But thanks so much for joining the Project Censored show today. And thank you for your excellent contribution to our latest book, Censored 2018.
My pleasure, Mickey. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
This is the Project Censored show, and I am your host, Mickey Huff. We're continuing our theme on Banned Books Week. We were just talking to graphic artist Peter Glanting, who was the artist for Trump Universe, which is a chapter in the new Project Censored book. And now we're joined by the author of the script of that chapter, Adam Bessie, who is a professor of English at Diablo Valley College, where I also teach. And Adam writes cartoons and nonfiction graphic essays, which have been featured in many national outlets, including The Atlantic, The Boston Globe, LA Times, Truthout, and more. Adam Bessie, welcome back to the Project Censored show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so we were just talking to Peter Glanting, the artist, and of course he was trying to talk about the pictures on the radio, which is not always easy. But you were the script behind this and kind of directed the way through. Tell our listeners about the Trump universe, and let's remember, some of the themes that you're riffing on here are related to what goes on in Banned Books Week, right? About the right to read, the right to think, to criticize, and academic freedom. So let's tie those together, Adam.
Well, you made an interesting comment first that he's talking about pictures on the radio. And that's comics, like any medium, like radio, do certain things well and do other things not so well. And comics, as we all know, are super accessible. That's why, I mean, you talk to anybody, almost everybody has read a comic all over the industrial world and elsewhere. Comics are accessible for anybody, and not just to read, but to make. I mean, my five-year-old makes cartoons and comics. They're one of the most accessible mediums, not just because there might be flashy pictures, but because it doesn't require literacy. It doesn't require specialized literacy, such as, you know, academic essays. So they're really a very accessible medium. And also, and this leads to the inspiration for this piece, is that I have this arcane idea. And believe it or not, despite popular thinking, comics are perfect for arcane ideas. Who wants to read an essay in words? I mean, I would, but not many other people would, about the use of science fiction metaphor and language regarding Donald Trump's presidency. Now, that is hyper-academic.
Well, I'm down with that, but keep going.
You and me, you're the editor, you and me, and maybe a handful of other people that are interested in this. But comics opens this up where anyone's going to open the Project Censored 18 book, and, you know, they'll be flipping through and see the cartoons by the illustrious Khalil Bendib. Yeah, he's great. They'll see that, and then they'll see our piece and be like, what's this? And get pulled in. And so comics have this sort of gravitational pull that if I just written an essay on in this, wouldn't. And beyond that, beyond being attractive and sort of a gateway drug to inject new ideas into people, comics are a really good medium for interrogating language. So if I found early in my career with Project Censored, I wrote lots of essays critiquing the framing of education discourse. And I'd write essays about the way the language worked. It's very abstract and hard to follow. But with pictures, you can make visual these abstract ideas. So So in the essay Trump Universe, and this is a graphic essay, we take some of these complicated ideas, such as the dominant metaphor that we are now living in a dystopia, right? So right now everyone's talking about 1984, which we feature in the comic, Brave New World, Handmaid's Tale. And these are all popular, people are watching them, and people are starting to think that maybe we are in a dystopia. And my argument was that that's very problematic thinking, and that to think we're in a dystopia is to say we're in a work of fiction, which is to say we're in this pre-formatted script. Now, this is a very abstract idea, and you can learn about it more by reading the work Trump Universe. But through the visual imagery, we're able to render this very complicated cerebral idea into something very accessible so that the reader may recognize that they're using this kind of science fiction language and consider if that's the way they'd like to enter into a productive dialogue about Mr. Trump. So that was the inspiration and why I gravitated to comics for doing this particular media commentary.
Yeah, indeed. And the kind of commentary that's here in Peter Glanting's wonderful pictures, it's definitely the kind of, you mentioned, it's the kind of theme that, you know, is kind of reserved seemingly for certain academic groups to geek out on, even though these are very significant and important concepts that should be part of our media landscape, should be part of our political discourse. And here we are during Banned Books Week, right? Mm. And Charles Brownstein was on earlier from the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, whom you know, and you teach a class on graphic novels. And these are the kinds of works that are actually censored or challenged the most.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually wearing my Comic Book Legal Defense Fund shirt right now. Remember the start of Banned Books Week. And today we were reading one of the most famous graphic works, Mouse by Art Spiegelman, you know, that started really the kind of work I do and many other people do in nonfiction graphic memoir and literature. And Mouse is one of the most challenged and banned books in schools. And that's because it is real and honest and unforgiving and painful to read and important. And indeed, one year I found that almost all the books I was teaching were on the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund's most challenged books. Now, I hadn't picked the books for that reason. I didn't even know it. They just happened to be ones that were pointed out. This is because comics, to go loop back to something I said earlier, are so accessible. And that's why they makes them so dangerous. That accessibility is dangerous to those who are in power, that don't want free speech. As I said earlier, I'm taking a concept in Trump Universe that is reserved, you know, for elite academic circles and trying to find a way to bridge it to everybody. And comics have always done that. And you look back to the beginning of comics, at the beginning of newspapers, you had the yellow kid. And that created the phrase yellow kid journalism or yellow journalism. And comics were there in order to bring in the illiterate new immigrants and give them information. And this is very threatening to be able to have a medium that can communicate with everybody, no matter their class, literacy. And to this day, comics are still dangerous because they allow children and older people to engage with ideas that otherwise would be walled off to them. And I think that's why the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund's work is so important, because it ensures children have a right to read work, especially impactful work, such as Mouse.
Indeed, Adam Bessie, and you know, we talked about that earlier. We had on James LaRue from the American Library Association in Charles, and we had on Abena Hutchful from the National Coalition Against Censorship and the Youth Free Expression Project. So that was a big theme, you know, earlier on the show, and that's why I wanted to bring it back to that with you, because I know that your love of comics and graphic work, and you know, you have really honed your script writing in this kind of format, in the graphic essay format, and you've worked with a lot of artists. And recently you've done this work with Peter Glanting for us at Project Censored. Mm-hmm. So just for the last couple minutes we have here, what are some things that you think you'd like people to take away from this as related, again, to the importance of Banned Books Week and this year's theme, which is the right to read?
That's a great question. I think for me, my passion for comics is really a passion for freedom of speech and the right to read. I grew up reading Mad Magazine. How many listeners right now grew up reading Mad Magazine, right? You may not know the history of Mad, though. Mad started out of the Comics Code of 1954, which essentially came out of the Committee on Juvenile Delinquency at that time. And it was considered that comics led to this spate of juvenile delinquency. You can read about that in David Hodju's The 10-Cent Plague, or watch the film Comic Book Confidential to get more information. But in any case, back to that point in time, comics were considered to be the video game of the era and to create violent behavior. And the industry basically adopted the comics code that just shut down free expression within that medium. Mad Magazine, notice it's called Mad Magazine, even though it has comics, got around the censorship code by calling itself a magazine. And it was a bastion of free expression that many of us grew up on. And I think about why I'm an English professor now and why I love literature. I can trace it back to Mad Magazine. I can trace it back later to The Simpsons. I can trace it back to a lot of comics and works that really engaged me in looking at the world in a particular way. And so my goal with this particular piece in the context of Banned Book Week is to show comics as a viable medium to communicate academic information. And secondarily, just to get people to look more into how to create their own stories. And that's what comics to me is about. How to create your own stories and not live within somebody else's.
Well, Adam Bessie, again, I thank you a lot for the work that you do at Diablo Valley College. I thank you, too, for all of the work you do with artists in the graphic medium. And is there a website you want to share with our listeners today as we wrap up our program on Banned Books Week?
Well, definitely Comic Book Legal Defense Fund would be the first place I would go to. Mm-hmm. And then for my work, you can just Google Adam Bessie, B-E-S-S-I-E, and you can find a bunch of my different comics and cartoons online.
Okay, well, Adam Bessie, thanks again for joining us on the Project Censored Show. We'll certainly have you back on in the future, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Mickey.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I am Mickey Huff, the executive producer and co-host of the program with Peter Phillips. Anthony Fest is our producer, Erica Bridgman, our engineer. Project Censored Show airs on 40 stations around the U.S. from Maui to New York. To learn more, go to www.projectcensored.org. We'll see you next time. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces slaving for almighty dollar bills. We won. We got the love of the thought brothers and our sisters.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, of the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief. Combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got